U.S. equities soar even as bond yields surge, plus a deep dive on what's really going on with the Archegos liquidation. Hi, I'm Jack Farley. This is The Daily Briefing. I have the pleasure of being joined by Real Vision's Max Wheathy and Weston Nakamura. How are you doing, guys?
Doing well.
Well, glad to hear it. Let's start off. What did you make of the price action today? The NASDAQ surging, I think, as of now, we're filming this about 3:40 p.m., 2% for the day. That on a day when U.S. 30-year bond yields surged by 4 basis points. And by the way, if I didn't mention, the S&P 500 is at another all-time high, right below that 4,000 level. What do you guys make of that?
Weston, why don't you kick it off? I know you've got an interesting theory relating to Archegos.
I don't know if that's, you know, specifically at the 4,000 mark, but yeah, I think that, look, SPX is going to be testing 4,000 for some time. This is clearly a very, you know, hard psychological resistance. I actually had a call out since last May as it was going through 3,000 of my 4 and 40 theory that people on the exchange are familiar with. And that would be SPX 4,000 with 40 million unemployed simultaneously. Looks like I'm almost there at the SPX 4,000 part. Probably there at the 40 million unemployed part too for real numbers. Closed that position last week. And I think that we're actually topping out here for reasons tied to AUDJPY. I'm not surprised that it's going to just bump up against this level for some time.
That's your 4 and 40 prediction. It's slightly grim. Max, I want to turn to you. What do you make of the action in the bond market today? One word that stuck in my mind is unruly. That's the term that was used to describe the sell-off in bonds over the past, let's say, month and a half. Today, however, you know, Biden sort of unrolling his additional stimulus for infrastructure, which is going to cost trillions in addition to the $1.9 trillion stimulus bill that was already passed. The bond vigilantes weren't out there in full force. What did you make of it?
Yeah, well, I think the interesting thing about the plan was as much as the spending, there's tax hikes that go along with it, but the spending I think takes place over like 8 years and the tax hikes to pay for it take about 15 years. There's a little bit of spending and income mismatch there. I think that will probably play itself out in the bond market. I mean, I don't pay too much attention to daily price swings in the bond market. I mean, I do think that yields are probably headed higher. I don't think that this trend is over for the meantime. I mean, the main thing that people have said is going to stop this is going to be yield curve control. While I do think that there will probably be yield curve control at some point, I mean, the market is at all-time highs. Like, why does the Fed need to backstop the equity market with yield curve control? I mean, that was the whole reason that everybody was saying, like, they're going to step in, they're going to cap yields because it's going to crash the market. Well, we're at all-time highs, so I don't really see that happening. And in the same way that Harley Bassman said that a steeper yield curve serves some policy goals too, it's good for the financial sector. At least if you're not wrapped up in the whole Archegos thing, it's good for the financial sector. I just don't really see that end that people thought was happening coming, at least at this moment in time.
Max, thanks for teeing it up for me with the setup for Archegos. Weston, I want you to explain the Archegos saga over since past Thursday, because it's been a huge story that has gripped investors, the news media, the investing public alike. But I don't think here on Real Vision with the Daily Briefing, we've really explained it. And I understand, you know, you've been following this very closely. You're something of, you have a lot of experience working in that world working with hedge funds. What can you tell us about your theory? Explain it for us, what's going on with Archegos.
Okay, so I'm going to start by saying that my explanation is complete speculation. Everybody's is. Nobody knows anything about what's really happening. That's the whole point of this, that there is zero transparency. So anything that I say, it's just guessing. So just want to, literally every single thing that I'm going to say, right? So we won't know the facts, and likely we probably will never know the real facts. But
yeah, sorry, Wes, I just want to interrupt. You're going to make some claims, which are speculations, and I'm glad that you tagged them beforehand. But like many other people, we do have some facts, we do have some charts, we do have some data on, you know, the various stocks that have tanked, the different banks. You're right that we don't have an exact picture of the different banks' exposure. All we have are rumors and rumors of rumors, which we're going to get into. But I think
market reactions are real.
We have been sort of, you know, in the Plato's cave. We've been looking at the wall, looking at the shadow puppets, and no one really has an idea of going on. So I'm glad that you're, you know, one of the few people who admits that. That being said, explain, you know, first for the people who don't really know what's going on, what did go on, and then share your view.
Sure. So last week, you saw Viacom, Discovery, DISCA, B shares, and a few of the, Chinese listed in the U.S. like GSX, Baidu, Tencent Music, and so on and so forth. They just took, you know, massive sell-offs, 50% or more. This is allegedly tied to a long short fundamental equity hedge fund based in the United States, but with offices in Asia, specifically in Korea, called Archigo, and it's a tiger cub. So basically, Julian Robertson and Tiger Asset Management, and this gentleman named Bill Huang, who had pleaded guilty for insider trading back in 2012. It's his family office fund, family office because of the fact that he's not allowed to take outside capital. This is actually...
And Weston, sorry to interrupt. Can you just quickly tell people what a family office is for the people who don't know?
A family office is a rich person's PA. With
PA, employees. Personal account. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically like you're so rich that you don't have to work in the investment business anymore. You're retired.
It means you don't have to exactly. You don't have to you don't have clients. You don't have other people's money. It's just your money. And therefore that actually gives you some leeway. You don't have a mandate to that you have to stick by. You don't have to report anything to, you know, I mean, you're not going to obviously have any withdrawals, and you don't have, most importantly, disclosure is very different. And that actually worked in the favor of this fund. So basically what happened was these stocks plummeted, like absolutely plummeted, and especially on Friday of last week on massive, massive volume. And what happened is that they're insanely leveraged. They were margin called for about 20 billion and they could not come up with the margin. And so they were forced sellers of this. Now by they, I don't mean Archigo, the fund itself. They were obsessively pretty much done as it was. By they, I mean the prime brokers, for which right now there are four of them. There is Nomura Holdings, there's Credit Suisse, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley that are, you know, kind of public. And then yesterday what surfaced was MUFG from Japan as well. These are the people who a prime broker is basically your brokerage, you know, it's your broker, you know, if you're a hedge fund, right? They provide hedge fund concierge services. That includes stock loan and things like that as well. And that also includes things like if you want to trade and if you don't want to necessarily, let's say, show up as a, you know, on a filing as a large holder of a company, you work with your prime broker and you can trade on swap. And this is exactly what this hedge fund was doing. What they were doing is they trade OTC on swap, over the counter on swap, and a swap arrangement is basically an agreement to trade where you have exposure to whatever security it is directionally, but you don't actually own the shares of it. You own a piece of paper that represents shares of it. And the prime broker is actually the one who owns the shares. So if you look at, you know, the top holders list, you won't find them there, even if they are a top holder, because you'll just see their prime brokers listed: Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Nomura, so on and so forth. And so essentially this is what they were, this is how they were able to put on so much leverage without anybody knowing, because they're each they're using each prime broker as if they were kind of a, you know, their primary prime broker. And none of them have any idea about the other, you know, competitor prime brokers that this hedge fund was taking on massive risk. They thought that they were all the ones who were, you know, they were getting 100% of the, you know, of the flow and of the, you know, CFD contract with differences or the total return swaps. And when it came to light that, you know, this fund was not able to meet their margin, Credit Suisse and Nomura especially were really in trouble. And so they basically, apparently what they did was they called all of them together, the prime brokers, and they said, listen, we need to have a very orderly unwind of these positions. Okay, no like blasting the market, no scaring the market. Like, this is, you know, we're all going to go down together if this happens. So let's all just work together. And that seemed to work for like a day and a half. And then on Friday in the morning, sometime between, you know, at, like open and lunchtime, Goldman decides to blast the market and, you know, breach protocol. And then after that, it was just every man for himself. And, you know, like Viacom shares, I think it dropped 20%+ on 10x, you know, ADV, average daily volume. And they, you know, the fund is done right now. It's not about the fund anymore. Now it's about the prime brokers. Now it's about Credit Suisse. Now it's about Nomura, you know, potentially getting a credit downgrade. You know, these stocks are taking 15-16% hits. There are more bodies, I think, in the prime brokerage world to yet to surface. And so it's just a really big, massive, like, black hole. Nobody knows how much exposure they have. Nobody knows if they're actually done unwinding the positions. Nobody knows what other hedge funds are also long these positions that definitely also got margin called if you get a security that drops 50% within three days. So there's way more unknowns than knowns. So that's basically the very general gist of it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So, Weston, it sounds like you don't think that this is quite over. Not necessarily that it's going to cause a huge risk-off event, but that there still is some leverage to unwind. Can you tell us, what do you think the signs are of that? Why do you think that? One thing that I've got my eye on is, I think a chart we've already put up is the percentage appreciation since last Thursday of the stocks that were in Archegos's books or that they were extremely leveraged to. So, you know, the big players like Baidu and Tencent Music, but, you know, the other ones like GSX, TechDo, Viacom, Discovery. What's interesting to me, Weston, is we haven't seen a real recovery in that. Yes, we did have Discovery Class B shares surge a tremendous amount today. It's a very illiquid stock with, I think, only 300,000 shares or so that are even extant. But the fact that we have that flatness, you haven't had a rebound, you know, especially in this market where every dip is to be bought. There's no such thing as a crash anymore. What signs are you seeing that make you think that this could be systemic? And then also, what do you make of the flatness we've seen since the crash? You know, they haven't recovered.
Well, first of all, this question of whether or not it's systemic, everything is systemic. If you're working with an institutional prime, if you're working with multiple institutional prime brokers, you are working directly with counterparties in the system. It is systemic. Whether it's systemic or not is not the question. The question is whether or not the systemic nature of it becomes a massive problem or not, but it is very much tied to the system. This is why, you know, Ral put out a video at the end of January about, it's called Perfect Storm of Risk. He basically warns about the insane amount of leverage in the system all over, right? Following, you know, GME and all that, and as well as the risk of one-sided positioning of the market, right? And so what happens is, so one-sided positioning is what moves a single stock or like an ETF or a basket of securities. Leverage is what I call the risk glue that connects the rest of the global system to a otherwise irrelevant bet gone wrong, right? Like subprime mortgage defaulting in 2007, 2008, you know, that made MBS products toxic to be long. That has nothing to do with your forward position, but the reason your forward position got cut 50% in 1 week in October of 2008 was because of leverage around the system, the risk glue, right? So what I'll say is that this is not happening in isolation. This is not a vacuum. You don't have these stocks just plummet. And these are not obscure like small cap stocks either, right? You don't have these stocks get halved, particularly Viacom, which got priced on Class B shares at $85 on Monday. And you are now looking at, if you bought that, you are now looking at a mark-to-market loss of down, what, 60% within that same week. These do not have, these are not without consequences. So the reason that I think that this is still ongoing is because the biggest overlooked reason, I think, is that today is Japan's fiscal year end. Okay, Japan has fiscal year end in March, at the end of March. So starting tomorrow, or I guess today for me, is a new year. So what you do, what you see is that in the last 2 weeks or so of March every year, Japanese corporations do window dressing. They, you know, they polish up their balance sheets. They make everything look as, you know, as clean as possible for their investors and all that. And then they come out with oh, by the way, we have a $2 billion loss or whatever. Nomura came out on last Sunday and gave a very general statement saying, we're going to have a $2 billion loss because of an event. That's really good detail. Thanks. And then they were basically forced to come out with a little bit more detail. And then I was saying, look, MUFG, Mizuho, these guys are next. MUFG comes out, $300 million. But the fact that they're coming out a day or two before fiscal year end, where they could push it off till next year's earnings, means that it's that much of kind of an urgent thing, right? And what I suspect is that there are other banks like Mizuho, who is an underwriter of that offering of Viacom at 85. They're very silent, and they definitely have exposure. Who knows who else who has exposure as well, but Japan fiscal year end means right now you're not going to get bad news reported. And so there's bodies buried within that. So that's happening, right? And until that passes through, you know, there's no way I'm going to, you know, have an all clear sign, right? In addition to that, I also think that in terms of, what was it like? Okay, yeah. So like counterparty risk and all that kind of thing. Okay, if you're talking about a long short equity fund, that this is what they are, right? They're not mandated to be long short equity, but they're not a long only fund. Okay, they have short positions. But if you see Viacom dropping 50% and, you know, and all that, where are all of the short squeeze blowups? Where is the plus 20% on 10x volume, you know, TMT stock, tech media telecom stock? You don't see any, right? Like I've not seen any squeeze. So that in itself is very alarming, because that either means that those have yet to come, and so this portfolio unwind is still very much in its like tip of the iceberg stages, or, which is something that's even scarier, is that indeed hedge funds have de-risked all of their short positions because of Wall Street Bets, and you no longer have short positioning in the markets anymore. And that is arguably much, much more of a risk than what more can come from this, how much more of this unwinding there is.
I was going to say, I was going to add to the short seller, because I'm talking to Carson Block tomorrow about this. One of the stocks that that dumped was GSX. And that stock has been a battleground stock for short sellers over the past year. And, you know, with all the stuff around Wall Street Bets, people have been saying, oh, it's retail. The retail army is squeezing all these shorts. And like, what do you know? It's a tiger cub who's behind controlling like huge, huge amounts of float for GSX, and really engaged in what could only be described as a short squeeze. I mean, Carson thinks that this company is a total fraud. He's on the record, actually, I think an institutional investor saying that like he thinks that all of the company's customers are Chinese bots. And so, you know, these are sophisticated investors. They know what they're doing. They're not surprised to find out like, oh, GSX is a total fraud. Like they know exactly what they're doing. And so it's unraveling another narrative. Like we had a congressional hearing where people were dragged in front of Congress to talk about this thing. And like, little do we know, I mean, GameStop has not come out to be part of this, but it's a similar stock. It's a similar story. And to say that this is the only fund that's engaging in this sort of thing is just not true. It's just or extremely unlikely to be true. So I'm interested to talk to Carson about that and see, because it does intersect with short selling in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, Max, I'm glad you brought that up. When you talk about these stocks that have been short squeezed, I think you're talking about before the past week, over the past, let's say, 6 to 8 months, right? Where they're actually up over the past year, despite their tremendous plummeting over the past week, because they've had a tremendous soar. And you're saying that Carson believes that is due to a short squeeze in the same way that we saw with GameStop.
Yeah, and that the people behind it, who are probably also behind GameStop, like it's not like, yes, there was some retail interest in GameStop, but the idea that these same type of funds that look at GSX as an opportunity to short squeeze and to get long for non-fundamental reasons on massive leverage and to control huge amounts of float, why wouldn't they do that same thing on all of these other stocks that people have attributed to the retail army? Like, I just, no offense to retail, but you're not $15 billion levered 5X. Like, you're just not. So I don't think you have the same ability to move markets as these guys who are literally causing, I'm looking at Viacom, a company that is a $28 billion company now after losing 50%. So like that's serious moves that are happening because of this company. And that's one fund, or it could be more than one fund. I mean, Weston, do you think that this is the only fund being unwound at this moment in time?
No, of course. I don't know how much they're levered. They're obviously insanely levered. But yeah, like you said, you're not going to have, what is it, like over $100 billion worth of market cap, first of all, appreciate into the sell-off and then just disappear within a week on one fund, right? Because, first of all, if it is one fund that's causing all of this, that's going to cause a potential credit down, or did cause a credit downgrade on Credit Suisse, yeah. And Nomura on a negative credit watch from S&P Japan, and you have the cabinet secretary from Japan make a statement saying we are keeping an eye on this, the financial services authority talking to the Bank of Japan saying we have our eyes on this. If one fund is causing that much ruckus, then my God, are we in trouble? Like, they're not the only ones who are going to lose money. So it's either that, or you have other funds that are very much involved and therefore other prime brokers. And again, this is the leverage glue, right? I refuse to believe that they're the only ones who went leverage long these names. There are retail investors, and there are long-only asset managers, and there are pension funds, and there are leveraged hedge funds that were long these companies. This is not a contrarian long. It was up 100% in a month, right? So there was definitely, there's definitely long positioning. And the fact that we don't hear about anybody else should be ringing alarm bells. Doesn't anyone find it strange that like, are they seriously the only ones that could possibly be long?
And well, the way you put it was, if they are the only ones, that's fucking scary, because one fun could cause this much damage. If they're not the only one and we're not hearing about it, that's scary because we're not hearing about it. Either way you slice it, it's not a good scenario.
Exactly. And the thing is that we don't know what's going on with this one fund. If we don't even know what funds are positioned and are at risk and with who, I mean, this is just, that's why there's so much uncertainty from my end. That's why I'm saying everything is speculation. I'm trying to put the pieces together. But you know, it's definitely, look, it's a very scary thing. And again, I'm going to go back to the lack of short positioning. If you have a market that is absent short positioning, that is very, very structurally dangerous. Short positions, I don't care who they are, what their, you know, agenda is or whatever it may be. If you have short positions in the market and the market is, you know, nosediving, you have an economic actor, in the market who has an economic benefit to buy into a falling market in order to take profit. You know, if you're long, you're buying into a falling knife. That's not good. But if you're, you know, if you have short positioning in the market, it acts as a stabilizer for, you know, markets in free fall. We are absent that. And that's very evident due to the fact that there are no short squeezes in this complete degrossing of, you know, of the entire hedge fund industry, apparently, right? So, you know, it makes me think about, like, okay, January 20, you know, the last week of January of this year, you know, post GameStop week, that was a very historic week to end a historic month. So you have, you know, I think it was the 29th or the 30th of January, that was the highest cash equity volume traded in history ever. It was 50% higher than the next highest, which was in October of 2008. It was also the largest call option buying day in history. And then 7 of the last 10 most active call option buying days in history occurred in January of 2021. So there was a ton of that going on. But obviously that was pushing up the markets. But I also believe that there was a ton of short covering happening everywhere in the fundamental long short equity hedge fund land to degross their positions. And so that short covering was also contributing to a lot of the upside we saw earlier this year. It was not buying of new positions. Of course, some of it was stimulus money and all that kind of thing too. But the institutional hedge fund community were closing up their shorts. I think that's what really was pushing markets higher, and now that they're out of them, you're seeing markets stall.
I want to zoom in on call options in a sec, but Wes, if I gather, you're saying short selling can kind of act as a springboard, because when the market tanks, that actually generates cash for those who are short the market, and then they have cash to plow back in. But if people are levered long, then instead of getting a sort of short squeeze, you can get a long squeeze, which is, I think, how Tommy Thornton described it to me on Friday. I'm a little bit out of the loop, because I've been following closely up until the past month that, you know, the Goldman Sachs basket of most shorted stocks has done really well. But over the past month, I've sort of fallen out of that. You know, how has the shorted interest evolved over the past month? Have we seen that dynamic continue? And I've got a question. I'll punt it to both of you, because Weston, I know, you know, you're a veteran in this world. And Max, I know you talk to a lot of big time short sellers. So either one.
The last data I checked on, you know, the like NASDAQ data, I mean, that chart is just, you know, of short positioning. It's basically, you know, it's leveled out for years and years and years, and then it just takes a hockey stick downwards. So, you know, yeah.
The positioning hasn't happened, but the success of shorts on some of their targets has changed. There has been a palpable change in the wind in the success of shorts targeting. I mean, mostly it's just like the shit SPACs and these companies like GSX, and partially because of, you know, an unwind like this, which is not the same thing as the market sort of repricing based off of fraud claims like most shorts would like, but it still matters that they are getting some momentum. So I'll be talking to Carson about that. One thing I want to bring up is we've been talking about this all as like a risk, this all about the risk, the downside potential here. But there's another angle that you could look at it, which is a lot of companies just went on sale. So Weston, like, how do you think about that? When something like this happens, there is systemic risk. It can signal, you know, broader downward pressure coming in the future. But at the same time, you have companies half off what they were trading at a week ago. And I personally was on Monday, I was on the phone or on WhatsApp with a fund manager talking. And in the middle of our conversation, he's like, sorry, my analyst has called me three times. And I guess like a couple of our stocks are down 25% on no news. They were some of the stocks that got into this. And then he's like, I got to go. Can I call you back later? And he was like, I'm still busy. I can't talk, but he just sent me his order. And he's like, it clears tomorrow. Like, we just bought, like, we'll find out whether I'm an idiot or not. So I think they have held up, but you know, that's a, and he's not levered. He's a long only manager. So he's not levered or anything like that, but he did take that moment and say, this is a discount. Has anything fundamentally changed in my outlook? And he bought into that. So there is a completely other way to look at this that, yeah, if you're already long, it probably sucks if you bought that secondary offering of Viacom at 85. But if you didn't buy that secondary offering of Viacom at 85, I mean, you're looking at just an incredible discount and on a bunch of other names too.
If you were interested in, you know, participating, but 85 was a little too high for you, 50 might look good. Right.
Yeah.
Like if all else equal, right, which is the case. So when you hear about like traders are braced for Monday open, why are they braced for Monday open? Why? Because they're just curious. No, they're looking for an opportunity. Right. Because they know that nothing has fundamentally changed about the company. It just got put on the sale rack and this might be an opportunity to go long. Now, I'm not saying that therefore go long just anything that, you know, sells off, but you know, when it's clearly a forced liquidation that is pushing the stock down, it's, you know, and it's something that you've been interested in and you're thinking, okay, when the entire market pulls back, this is a time for me to be able to cherry pick. Well, you just got, you know, cherry picked in the market cherry picked for you. So that's what I would have said for years until 2 weeks ago or 1 week ago. Now this time is different. Here's why it's different, right? Like I said, in the absence of short selling, okay, this is a long short fund, and there are plenty of long short funds out there. They're not, you know, all of a sudden getting rid of, you know, having short exposure and, you know, being just directionally long the market. So I think that in the Archegos case right now, a lot of people are saying like, well, yeah, this looks concerning, but look at the broader index. Look at the Nikkei. It's green. It's fine. Everything's fine. Like everything seems very calm and orderly. VIX is under 20 and this and that, right? Here's what I would say to that. If you're a long short fund, you can't short stocks in the United States because of Wall Street bets, okay? You'll get squeezed. You'll get death squeezed 20x, right? You'll get melded. They don't trade Europe. They're based in Korea, but you can't short anything on the KOSPI exchange and the Korea stock exchange because Korea has a year-long short sell ban that's been in place. They are not allowed in Hong Kong, Singapore. So that only leaves Japan as the only active market that they are trading that they can short. There was one short squeeze on Rakuten, like that was about 2 weeks ago, and otherwise there was nothing. So what are they doing? Are they really just a long only fund? So I believe that they actually just became a kind of a normal hedge fund where they took a single stock long position and they shorted the index as a whole. And that's why you see on Friday when all this chaos was going on, you saw the indices and especially the Asia indices. So if you look at EWJ, which is iShares Japan, EWY, which is iShares Korea, for example, and SPY for that matter, they all ramp up into the close, like in the last 20 minutes of the into the close on cash close on Friday. Does somebody just get suddenly bullish Asia on a Friday afternoon? No, that's clearly a looks like a part of this unwind, right? So when people say that markets look fine,
yeah,
take a look at the markets, they're green. What you're pointing at is a green market that is part of an unwind of a position.
Weston, so, I'm glad you mentioned that. So you're saying that when a stock goes up, when the market pumps up, that can be a sign of an unwind as well, because people were short the market, so they have to unwind that position. Weston and Max, this has been a phenomenal conversation. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I've got an invite to extend, at least to Weston, that we continue this conversation on the exchange. I feel like we really only have scratched the surface. I don't know if we've given the people at home a definitive answer, but when things are this murky, sometimes you don't need a definitive answer. Sometimes you just need a catalyst to learn more. I think this has been a very good conversation. And for people who are watching this on YouTube, can you please hit that like button? Actually, don't hit the like button. I want you to smash it. I want you to smash that like button, smash that subscribe button. Thanks you, Weston and Max. I'm glad that you joined, because as much as this sort of not chaos, but there's this turmoil that's roiling beneath, and it's unclear if it's been resolved yet. Is the unwind over? And no one really knows what's going on. At the same time, the S&P 500, hit an all-time high today and is flirting with 4,000. In fact, I'm going to check. Is it at that 4,000 level? Nope, it hasn't hit it yet. But we're like 17 points off. So Max, Weston, thank you guys so much for joining. And we'll leave a link in the descriptions for Weston and I to talk about in the exchange. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks a lot.